If you'll turn in your Bible to 1 Kings chapter 2, 1 Kings chapter 2, going to read about Solomon. And we left our last tape and David had just died. We were reading about the death of David in Chronicles. Now we're back in 1 Kings chapter 2 and we're going to learn about Solomon. Solomon is a sad story in the scripture. By the way, Solomon is one of the most misunderstood men in the Bible, at least most of the Christians you meet on the street think Solomon was this great king, lived a great life, and died a great king, and that's not at all the case. In fact, the Statler brothers even wrote a song called "Didn't Solomon Have It All Together?" And the biblical answer to that is no, he didn't. Solomon started out with all of the advantages, an extremely godly father, David. He inherited a kingdom that was intact and powerful. He was given wealth and wisdom by God. And yet, because of ignoring the scripture and leaning a little much like Solomon, leaning on some personality traits that were inherent in him and getting puffed up in his own mind as far as his own importance, Solomon, we will see by the end of his life, was doing evil in the sight of the Lord. Now, there wouldn't be a lot to the lesson of Solomon if God gave Solomon more wisdom than everyone that had been before him, and then he lived a great life and died. What would the lesson be? If God gives you lots of wisdom, you can have a great life? No, the point of Solomon much more is that your wisdom and knowledge is not of account compared with the purity of your heart before God and the things that you do for God from that pure heart. We're in 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 10. Then David rested with his fathers and was buried in the city of David. And again, this would be Jerusalem, not Bethlehem. He had reigned 40 years over Israel, 7 years in Hebron, 33 in Jerusalem. Verse 12, so Solomon sat on the throne of his father David, and his rule was firmly established. And now, in the rest of chapter 2, Solomon's going to have some trouble early on in the kingdom, some from within his own family, one of his brothers, that he's going to have to get on top of, and he does that, and by the last verse of chapter 2, verse 46, 1 Kings 2:46. Then the king, and that's Solomon, gave the order to Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he went out and struck Shimei down and killed him, and the kingdom was now firmly established in Solomon's hand. So the kingdom now, by the end of chapter 2, is firmly established as Solomon's kingdom. In 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 1, we see Solomon starting out. By the way, I will be fair and say right from the start that there's an awful lot written about Solomon, and I'm going to read the parts that portray Solomon's downhill slide and focus on those. And I'm very well aware of the fact that somebody could say, well, you're slanting the record here. What about all the great things Solomon did? But the majority of the great things Solomon did were in the first 20 years of his reign, and they did not contribute to what happened in the last 20 years of his reign in the downward slide. So I want to show the things that were happening inside Solomon and Solomon's kingdom that led to his demise. In 1 Kings 3:1, Solomon made an alliance with Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and married his daughter. He brought her to the city of David until he finished building his palace and the temple of the Lord and the wall around Jerusalem. Does the verse say that Solomon loved Pharaoh's daughter? No, it doesn't. Here Solomon is marrying an unbeliever, and he's marrying an unbeliever because of the economic advantage. And this is it wasn't stated in the scripture, you can't marry an Egyptian, definitely, but it's intriguing that really early on in Solomon's reign, he's marrying not because of love, but because of an economic advantage. And that's something that you'll see in Solomon's life. He was a little overly concerned about money and a little concerned about people. Verse 2, the people, however, were still sacrificing at the high places because a temple had not yet been built for the name of the Lord. Solomon showed his love for the Lord by walking according to the statutes of his father David, except that he offered sacrifices and burned incense on high places. And for the first 20 years of Solomon's reign, and he reigned 40, he really was a very wise and excellent king. And here he's loving, that says that Solomon showed his love for the Lord. Verse 4, the king went to Gibeon to offer sacrifices, for that was the most important high place. And remember that Moses' altar was there. That's where Moses' altar was, because the Gibeonites were the wood carriers and the water carriers for the temple. Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream. And here, like God appeared to Abraham, like God appeared to Jacob, like God appeared to Moses and the elders of Israel, like God appeared to Samuel, God appears to Solomon. He appears to Solomon in a dream, and God said, "Ask for whatever you want me to give you." And Solomon answered, "You've shown great kindness to your servant, my father David, because he was faithful to you and righteous and upright in heart. You've continued this great kindness to him and have given him a son to sit on his throne this very day. Now, O Lord my God, you've made your servant king in place of my father David. But I'm only a little child and do not know how to carry out my duties. Your servant is here among the people you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to count or number. So give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern this great people of yours?" That's a tremendous prayer and showed tremendous heart on Solomon's part. The Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So God said to Solomon, "Since you've asked for this, not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice, I will do what you've asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart so that there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. Moreover, I will give you what you have not asked for, both riches and honor, so that in your lifetime you will have no equal among kings. And if you walk in my ways and obey my statutes and commands as David your father did, I will give you a long life." Then Solomon awoke, and he realized it had been a dream. He returned to Jerusalem and stood before the Ark of the Lord's covenant and sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings, and he gave a feast for all his court. Now two prostitutes came to the king and stood before him. One of them said, "My lord, this woman and I live in the same house. I had a baby while she was there with me. The third day after my child was born, this woman also had a baby. We were alone. There was no one in the house but the two of us." And here is a great example that God gives in the Word of Solomon's wisdom and how practical it was. And here are these two prostitutes, and they're in a big war. They're fighting over this baby. And there's no witnesses. And verse 19, here's the story. "During the night, this woman's son died because she lay on him. So she got up in the middle of the night and took my son from beside my side while I, your servant, was asleep. She put him by her breast and put her dead son by my breast. The next morning, I got up to nurse my son, but he was dead. But when I looked at him closely in the morning light, I saw that it wasn't the son I'd born. The other woman said, 'No, the living one is my son, the dead one is yours.' The first one insisted, 'No, the dead one is yours, the living one is mine.' And so they argued before the king." This was not a pretty sight. These two women are sitting there and catfighting and scratching and shouting back and forth and pulling on the kid. And you can imagine the kid is screaming and howling. And Solomon here tries to keep a peace of mind so he can give the justice and judgment of God. Verse 23, the king said, "This one said, 'My son is alive and your son is dead.' Well, that one says, no, your son is dead and mine is alive. Then the king said, bring me a sword. So they brought a sword for the king. Then he gave an order. Cut the living child in two, give half to one, half to the other. The woman, whose son was alive, was filled with compassion for her son and said to the king, please, my lord, give her the living baby. Don't kill him. But the other one said, neither I nor you shall have him. Cut it in two. Wow, nice lady. No wonder she wasn't responsive to her baby and lay on it in the middle of the night and killed it. Boy, she just didn't care much for human life at all. Verse 27, then the king gave this ruling. Give the living baby to the first woman. Do not kill him. She is his mother. When all Israel heard the verdict the king had given, they held the king in awe, because they saw that he had wisdom from God to administer justice. In chapter 4, verse 1, so King Solomon ruled over all Israel. Now, in ruling over all Israel, he's got to feed himself and his palace and his guards and his attendants. So in verse 7, Solomon also had 12 district governors over all Israel who supplied provisions for the king and the royal household. Each one had to provide supplies for 1 month in the year. These are their names. Now, there are 12 tribes in Israel and 12 months in the year. So it ought to be pretty easy to work out that each tribe could provide food for Solomon's house 1 month out of 12. But that wouldn't work out exactly, or at least Solomon didn't think it would, because you have some of the tribes like Manasseh who inhabit one of the great grain-producing areas of Israel, and you've got other tribes like Asher, perhaps, that is crammed up in the mountains, and it's a little harder for them to produce food. So here, in these next verses, verses 8 through 19, Solomon's servants that are over the charge of getting him food on a daily basis are listed. And the areas are listed that are going to be the areas, the administrative districts that will provide food. And these administrative districts did not correspond to the tribal areas that were assigned by Joshua, by Revelation. And it's very easy to understand how Solomon here, breaking down the old tribal boundaries, there would be the start of feuding and disagreements. And this could very easily be one of the problems that, one of the things that later on caused problems in the kingdom, the breaking down of the old tribal barriers, or tribal boundaries, I should say. In verse 20, the people of Judah and Israel were as numerous as the sand on the seashore. They ate, they drank, and they were happy. And Solomon ruled over all kingdoms, from the river to the land of the Philistines, as far as the border of Egypt. So the northern and southern borders were extended. I mean, if Solomon ruled from the river, the Euphrates, to the border of Egypt, those were the boundaries that God, way back in Genesis 15, had told Abraham that would be ruled. Of course, there's the land of the Philistines kind of carved out there. But that, if you go look at your Oxford Bible Atlas, you'll see this huge area that Solomon was ruling over. These countries brought tribute and were Solomon's subjects all his life. Verse 22, Solomon's daily provisions were 30 cores of fine flour, 60 cores of meal. Now a core, C-O-R, is about 6 bushels. It's just a shade over 6 bushels. So now, Solomon's daily provisions. This is the amount of food that Solomon's household consumed every single day. 30 cores of fine flour, or around 180 to 185 bushels of fine flour a day. 60 cores of meal. And so you can figure again, 370 bushels of meal. that's somewhere close to 550 bushels of meal and grain, flour and meal a day. Now, that would bake somewhere around 20,000 of our loaves of bread. If you go to the grocery store and snatch a loaf of bread off the shelf, you can figure that if you got 20,000 of those loaves of bread, fill up your car and make several trips back and forth to the grocery store, that's how much bread Solomon's household and his palace were chowing down on per day. And furthermore, there's 10 head of stall-fed cattle. And if you want to say that a stall-fed or a grain-fed cow will dress out to some, 600 pounds or so, I mean, you're talking 6,000 pounds of hamburger meat or steaks or roasts or whatever. But that's not all. There were 20 of the pasture-fed cattle, and they might dress out to, 400 pounds apiece or something? I mean, you get a cow standing out in the field. Besides that, there's 100 sheep and goats, as well as deer, gazelles, roebucks, and choice fowl, different types of birds. The basic picture is we can give a loaf of bread and a pound of meat to 20,000 people. And that's how much Solomon's eating every day. By the way, who's paying for that? The people. This is tax money. But the kingdom is secure and they're happy. But later on, we're going to find out that Solomon doesn't mind taxing the people and working the people, and will do that to excess. Verse 25, at this point, in Solomon's lifetime, Judah and Israel from Dan to Beersheba lived in safety, each man under his own vine and fig tree. So, verse 29, God gave Solomon wisdom, very great insight, and a breadth of understanding as measureless as the sand on the seashore. Solomon's wisdom was greater than the wisdom of all the men of the East, greater than the wisdom of Egypt. He was wiser than any other man, including Ethan the Ezrahite, wiser than He-Man. By golly, that takes some doing when He-Man and Battle Cat, and you're wiser than He-Man. No. Haman. Wiser than Haman, Kokal, Darda, the sons of Mahal, his fame spread to all the surrounding nations. He spoke 3,000 proverbs. Now, J. Finnis Dake, who is the annotator of Dake's Bible, had counted the proverbs and counted 915 or so proverbs. So if you've taken all of the proverbs in the book of Proverbs and memorized them, Solomon knew three times as many proverbs. He spoke 3,000 proverbs. His songs numbered 1,005. He described plant life from the cedar of Lebanon, which is, of course, the huge, magnificent tree of the Middle East, to the hyssop that grows out of the walls, the little plant that just is around everywhere. He also taught about animals and birds, reptiles and fish. Men of all nations came to listen to Solomon's wisdom, sent by all the kings of the world who had heard of his wisdom. So Solomon certainly knew an immense amount of things. In chapter 5, Solomon starts the preparation for the building of the temple. And of course, we remember that David had already done a lot of preparation work for the temple. And in 1 Kings chapter 5, verse 13, King Solomon conscripted laborers from all Israel. He conscripted laborers from all Israel, 30,000 men. He sent them off to Lebanon in shifts of 10,000 a month, so that they spent 1 month in Lebanon and 2 months at home. Adoniram was in charge of the forced labor. Now the word you've got to pay attention here is forced labor. Why were these men called forced labor? They were called forced labor because they weren't paid. Now remember, Solomon doesn't mind living off the tax money of the people to the tune of a loaf of bread and pound of meat for 20,000 people a day. And he doesn't mind making the Israelites work and not paying them. And we see that here with 1 Samuel, 1 Kings chapter 13, or verse 5:13. Again, I think maybe it's an over-concern for money. I'm not sure why you wouldn't pay the workers, but Solomon didn't. Verse 15, Solomon had 70,000 carriers and 80,000 stonecutters in the hills, as well as 3,300 foremen who supervised the project and directed the workmen. At the king's command, they removed from the quarry large blocks of quality stone to provide a foundation of dressed stone for the temple. The craftsmen of Solomon and Hiram and the men of Gebel cut and prepared the timber and stone for the building of the temple. So at last, the temple was ready to start to build. In chapter 6, verse 1, in the 480th year after the Israelites had come out of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month Ziv, the second month, he began to build the temple of the Lord. Chapter 6, verse 1 is extremely important for establishing the chronology of the time period, because we learn that the fourth year of Solomon was the 480th year after the Israelites had come out of Egypt, after the year of the Exodus. And of course, we learn from Genesis and verses and Exodus and from Galatians that from the promise to Abraham in Ur of the Chaldees to the Exodus was 430 years. So it gives us a very, very tight chronology from Abraham, his call in Ur, all the way to Solomon's fourth year, 430 years, 480 years. But Solomon starts the temple in the fourth year of his reign in the month Ziv, which is the second month, and he begins to build. By the way, in building the temple, look at verse 7. Talk about tight preparations. In building the temple, only blocks dressed at the quarry were used, and no hammer, chisel, or any other iron tool was heard at the temple site while it was being built. Everything was dressed and prepared and finished and ready to be slipped into place before it ever reached the site of the temple. Magnificent preparation work. We'll go all the way over to the 37th verse. 37th verse of 1 Kings chapter 6. The foundation of the temple of the Lord was laid in the fourth year in the month of Ziv. In the 11th year in the month Bul, which is the eighth month, the temple was finished in all its details according to its specifications. He had spent 7 years building it. In spite of all the preparations David had done, it took 7 years to build the temple. So he started in his fourth year, and he took seven years to do it, and that's why in 38, it was in the 11th year of Solomon, that the temple was completed. And boy, when they completed the temple, they had quite a dedication, and if you'll put your ribbon here and turn to 1 Chronicles chapter 5. Chronicles goes into much more detail than the book of Kings does on the dedication of the temple. And I said 1 Chronicles 5. I'm sorry, 2 Chronicles chapter 5. And 2 Chronicles chapter 5, when all the work Solomon had done for the temple of the Lord was finished, he brought in the things his father David had dedicated, the silver and gold and all the furnishings, and he placed them in the treasuries of God's temple. Now, chapter 5 says, when all the work Solomon had done for the temple was finished. Well, he finished, according to Kings, in the eighth month. The eighth month of the year. Then he took some time and he got everything brought into the temple, made sure the temple was set up. In chapter 5 of 2 Chronicles verse 2, Then Solomon summoned to Jerusalem the elders of Israel, all the heads of the tribes, and the chiefs of the Israelite families, to bring up the Ark of the Lord's Covenant from Zion, the city of David. And all of the men of Israel came together to the king at the time of the festival in the seventh month. Now remember, there were three feasts a year that all the Israelites were required to attend: Passover, Pentecost, and the Feast of Tabernacles. And the Feast of Tabernacles was the feast at the end of the year. It was in the seventh month. And that's why it's called here the Festival of the Seventh Month. So Solomon finished the temple in the eighth month of his 11th year. And then it's 11 months later, in the month Tishri, the seventh month, that he's going to dedicate the temple. So that gave him 11 months to get the temple all decked out properly, get all the kinks out of the service, if you will, call all the elders and make sure there were plenty of preparations already taken care of for this huge feast and festival that's going to take place with the dedication of the temple. In verse 2, Solomon summoned to Jerusalem the elders of Israel for this festival. Verse 4, while all the elders of Israel had arrived, or when all the elders of Israel had arrived, the Levites took up the ark. They brought up the ark and the tent of the meeting and all the sacred furnishings in it. The priests who were Levites carried them up. And King Solomon and the entire assembly of Israel had gathered about him, were before the ark, sacrificing so many sheep and cattle that they could not be recorded or counted. There's so much sacrificing going on here that nobody can even count what's going on. In 13, the trumpeters and singers joined in unison as with one voice to give praise and thanks to the Lord. Accompanied by trumpets, cymbals, and other instruments, they raised their voices in praise to the Lord and sang, "He is good, His love endures forever." Then the temple of the Lord was filled with a cloud, and the priests could not perform their service because of the cloud, for the glory of the Lord filled the temple of God. What a great time. The temple was finally completed. God had lived in a tent for hundreds of years and traveled around. And then the site of the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite was picked. Solomon got to build this temple. It's completed after 7 years of hard work. And when they brought the ark into the temple, they sacrificed so many animals you couldn't count them. And the glory of the Lord filled the temple. What a fantastic time. And then adjacent to this dedication feast, they keep the Feast of Tabernacles as well. If you'll go over to Second Chronicles chapter 7, when Solomon finished praying, by the way, this is still the dedication of the temple. When Solomon finished praying, fire came down from heaven and consumed the burnt offering and the sacrifices, and the glory of the Lord filled the temple. So as God had lit the fire on the original tabernacle altar, as God had lit the fire for David at this very site, when David offered a sacrifice, so God lights the temple fire. And the priests, in verse 2, couldn't even enter. In verse 4, then the king and all the people offered sacrifices before the Lord, and King Solomon offered a sacrifice of 22,000 head of cattle and 120,000 sheep and goats. So the king and all the people dedicated the temple of God. I guess they did. Verse 7, Solomon consecrated the middle part of the courtyard in front of the temple of the Lord, and there he offered burnt offerings and the fat of the fellowship offerings, because the bronze altar he had made couldn't hold the burnt offerings. Yeah, I have a hard time imagining how you'd build an altar that would hold the sacrifices from 22,000 cattle. No wonder he had to use the whole temple space. So verse 8, Solomon observed the festival at that time for 7 days, and all Israel with him, a vast assembly, people from Lebo Hamath to the Wadi of Egypt. On the eighth day they held an assembly, for they had celebrated the dedication of the altar for 7 days, and the festival, that would be the Feast of Tabernacles, for 7 days more. So they've got the temple dedication feast and the Feast of Tabernacles, total of 15 days. On the 23rd day of the seventh month, he sent the people to their homes, joyful and glad in heart for the good things the Lord had done for David and Solomon and for his people, Israel. And we'll continue back in 2 Kings chapter 7 on the other side of this tape.